for the team in general, it truly is a mission. We want Somersault to be the biggest version of what it can be. We know that we've caught lightning in a bottle, and we don't want to let each other down as a team or the consumer down, because what we're doing is so important as it relates to the future of the industry.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to another episode of The Safari. My name is Morty Singer, and today we are going to learn about swimwear. And Laurie Coulter is with me today, and she was introduced to me by Amanda Baldwin, who was on this podcast once, and she is the CEO of Supergoop. And when Amanda Baldwin says you have to speak to someone and meet them, you jump. So I am so happy to speak to Laurie Coulter. She is the co-founder of Somersault, which was originally only a swimwear business, and they've expanded beyond there to many other categories and disciplines. But they've really built this digital-first ecosystem with a combination, this sort of rather amazing cocktail of fit and product, which Laurie brought to the table. And then Reshma Chatram Chamberlain, who is her co-founder, was from a digital marketing background. So together they have this really interesting yin-yang, so the left and right brain of their business. And it's really become an absolute powerhouse. So stick around. She's absolutely incredible. Welcome, Laurie Coulter, to The Safari. Thank you so much for joining me. Where do we find you today?
I'm based in St. Louis, Missouri, which is Somersault's headquarters. So really glad to be here with you.
Somersault's headquarters, right on the Mississippi, where you've had to build beaches, I guess, to sell your swimwear, correct?
Not exactly a top beach destination, but you know, swimwear is sold across the world, actually.
One of the things in researching you two, you and your co-founder, Reshma, who is fantastic in everything she brings to your table. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But there's a story that she went, I think, on safari and found the person that she was on safari with who didn't know her, literally came on safari with one of your swimsuits. And so literally this company founded in St. Louis is now found in the backwaters of some camping village or safari village somewhere. And how does that feel when, for you, I'm sure it's happened to you in other instances, how does it feel to start something with your own hands and then find it in the wild, literally in the wild in that case?
You know, I think what all founders are about is just building something from scratch and, you know, having that vision and then the ability to go out and execute on it. But one of the things that's fascinating about apparel in general, and Somersault in particular, is that our cycle of, you know, concept, design, concept, prototype, and then production, and then actually seeing it on a consumer is relatively fast. And so we get the privilege and the honor of seeing our product in the wild, literally, to your point, over and over again. And the thrill never lessens. We just absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's such a joy. So I've always been fascinated with names, with the names of brands and the meaning that those names infuse into the storytelling, but also the products themselves and the founders, the team members, then the consumers. And I think it's quite a beautiful thing to name a company and to live by that name if you can. And it does seem that that name, your name, Somersault, is such a happy, smiley, frankly, quite progressive name, because fashion retail tends to be a little bit, I don't know, moody, a little bit, we don't smile, and which I think is a bit yesterday's news, by the way, but so refreshing to see a brand that is unapologetically childish, youthful, happy, and somersaulty. So tell us about how you came up with that, how you managed to get that name, first of all, and how it's sort of told your story and helped you tell your story.
Well, first of all, you did a beautiful job of summing up sort of the brand values there. But, you know, at the very beginning, our goal was to really inspire childlike joy in the lives of our consumers. So really harkening back to the days at the beach when we all were completely uninhibited and just all about having fun. And why, you know, so many women, when they're wearing a swimsuit, kind of withdraw from the good things in life. And so for us, it was really coming up with a brand that was about, you know, making sure that the consumer was standing in the sunshine, the ray of light, the summer, the salt of the sea. And when we go back to those early days, my co-founder and I were sort of brainstorming. She is truly a branding guru and had a fantastic team that joined us at Somersault. But the first name they brought to me was actually already taken. And I said, I like it, but one, there's another swimwear brand, so that's not going to work. And two, I think it's too swimwear specific. You know, we wanted something that put us in the disruptor category so that we sat next to other direct-to-consumer brands that were clearly disrupting a vertical. So it was important that it not be my name or, to your point, something too moody, too serious. It was about fun. And I said, I don't like, you know, your name, but what do you think about Cannonball? And that was a total dud, by the way.
I don't know. I kind of like it. That could be your men's brand.
Also,
you know?
Too swimwear specific, but the feedback was positive. And they said, you know what? I think that's, you're onto something. We want movement. We want the idea of turning the industry upside down. We want, sunshine, a ray, standing in a ray of light. We want joy. And they came back and said, what do you think about Somersault? And, you know, there's no doubt that was it. And what's fascinating about it, Morty, is that it was actually available. And then there's a whole additional story about how we acquired the domain somersault.com. But we got it done and grateful we were able to, and really the rest is history. And to your point, this is a brand name that feels like it should have been around forever.
So let's stay on brand for a second, because today, well, I think maybe forever, but it hasn't always been done properly, I think. Taking the zeitgeist of today, whether it be recognizing that women of a certain age don't feel of a certain age, and that they are a psychographic, not a demographic. Younger people may have a different size, shape, body than others, and who are looking for something different. And then everyone in between. So presumably your customer is every woman on some level, but obviously you probably narrow that down somehow. But how does, for you, the name and the mission really crystallize in the 21st century? What is it about that woman who looked at the competitive set and said, you know what? And you even said this in an article the other day, which was something to the effect of, you know, you caught lightning in a bottle on day one. You opened the doors and suddenly, boom, it just was apparent this was going to be a wicked success. But what is it that the industry maybe wasn't seeing or picking up on that you caught and was able to distribute to those women?
Well, I think we're at a unique period in time where the industry is truly under disruption in multiple ways. We all know the consumers sort of moved to e-commerce through the even prior to the pandemic, but through the pandemic is absolutely a once in a lifetime kind of generational shift in buying behavior. So there's that. And then you move to sort of consumer values at a personal level that are now driving their purchasing decisions. And so for us, it was really about presenting women Which by the way, this is a founding team of women for women, right? Like we're uniquely suited, and also located in the middle of the US, which a lot of consumer brands recently have made the mistake of being too narrow in the view of the US consumer. And when you do that, you never really get to mass. And Somersault is uniquely positioned to really appeal to your point, to this broad audience of women that is every woman. She's the cool girl in Brooklyn. She's the professional in Chicago. She's the mama in Tulsa, Oklahoma, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what binds that consumer is this understanding that women have been presented in a truly over-sexualized way for so long that we forgot that, you know, being at the beach is about joy. It's not about over-sexualization in any way, shape, or form. It's about fun. It's about the truly important things. And so I believe this is a universal value, and Somersault does appeal across, you know, a wide variety of consumers. We present women of all ages, all sizes, all races, all intellectual kind of backgrounds in our marketing materials, and our consumer, we want her to see herself reflected in the brand and you know, part of our community. You know, the other side of the consumer value equation is really sustainability. And what's interesting is you'll notice we don't lead typically with sustainability. That's because we believe it's a standard for doing business in today's world. It's table stakes.
Yep.
And so from day one, we used recycled nylon in our swimwear. Today, you know, obviously, majority of our product is still swimwear, but you know, we have a large apparel business that's just non-swim. And again, it's about recycled materials, sustainable sourcing, organic cottons, et cetera, et cetera. And the consumer is expecting that and looking to brands that they trust to make good intentional decisions along the way.
Mm. When, you know, referencing the way you have your models and everyone show up in your marketing materials, I have two young daughters who always come up to me and ask me why the models aren't smiling. Are they unhappy? Not in your marketing materials, but in general, everywhere else. And I did notice with some satisfaction that indeed your models do smile. And it's so welcoming to see that, because it's very rare, especially maybe in swim. I think there's a moodiness that always tends to prevail. And so on behalf of my daughters, two thumbs up.
Thank you. And I mean, what we love is that our consumers, just like you, send us messages, you know, over and over again around sort of this passing on a positive inclination in regards to how women are perceived in the media, as opposed to sort of, you know, making sure that the buck stops here with our generation with regards to this over-sexualization.
So let's talk a little bit about your backgrounds, respectively, Rishmanu, and to start with you. So you had involvement in the fashion industry, I think through True Measure, I think was something that you had started. And I know that you partnered with people like Macy's, and you had a whole history within the industry, which probably made you a bit of a wizard when it came to fit and thinking about female bodies. And so how did that journey inform what you effectively were trying to do with Somersault?
So really, you know, fit, inclusivity as it relates to fashion and appealing to this kind of mass audience, that's really a trend in my career since day one. And Rushman and I are both serial entrepreneurs. What you see is a lot of times across founders, this idea of the outsiders, insider, right? And so you can be part of every group, but not core in every group. And I see us that way from an industry perspective. But, you know, my prior business, we'd scanned 10,000 women, made a swimsuit for each of them, custom to their measurements. And so we had that one-to-one feedback loop that informed our fit and is still the basis for our fit to this day. think about the perfect building blocks or Lego blocks of a design. And so we had over a million potential kind of what I would call standardized combinations, think leg heights, necklines, bra types, straps, et cetera, that we use at Somersault still to this day. And that platform, which is essentially an agile manufacturing and sourcing platform, includes Hero Fabrics, which in our case are sustainable, certified sustainable, which mm-hmm. is very important. We have those relationships back to the mill, gives us flexibility and transparency where our garments are being sourced from at the origin, right? Gives standardized fit, speed as it relates to the ability to iterate on those multiple combinations. And of course, then that the suppliers and partners that are able to move at the speed of lightning like Somersault does over and over again. And truly, it's this platform that has allowed us to grow so quickly and to expand beyond swimwear successfully and to do it fast.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the safari. I'm always fascinated by sort of the alchemy of a good partnership. And you have, Laurie shows up and talks to Reshma, who is a digital marketing wizard, and you are come from the fashion world, but with a fit perspective, and together, this big bang happens. And her agency, I think, is where you went to originally, and then you became partners. How do you yin yang in running the business, and where does it overlap? Where do you divide and conquer? Because it's a really interesting thing to explore. Because in the history of fashion, in fact, I would say even in the history of consumer products, but it's particularly prevalent in fashion, where there's been a partnership, a duo, who have run businesses or built businesses, whether it be the big Europeans, but even here, Ralph Lauren and Marc Jacobs and Saint Laurent and Valentino, each of them were had partners who were their alter ego. How does that show up at Somersault?
I think that's consistent for not just fashion, but founders in general and investors. Readily state they're looking to invest in teams, not individuals, a lot of the time, not always, but for us, that's been one of the most rewarding parts of starting Somersault. And we always say that sort of I'm a business mind with a design bent, and she's a creative with a business bent. And that's where the, as you put it, alchemy comes from. A lot of people don't realize how tech forward Somersault is. So our tech stack is very complicated, over 75 apps, 50 of which that we have mapped back to our operational data warehouse and our, via automated APIs that give us those insights and optimizations across the board on the marketing side of things, but also on the, operations of business. Advanced analytics and machine learning. And Reshma and I, the common theme between both of us is this just deep understanding of technology and how it relates to tomorrow's tech-enabled retail world. And so that's really the common theme. We're uniquely aligned in our kind of mission and vision and understanding of the consumer. And then, we separate sort of responsibilities on a day-to-day basis based on our own functional area expertise. She certainly leads marketing and all things consumer experience. And then sort of I have the rest of the world, which includes, the economics of the business, yep, as well as operations and merch and product dev sourcing. The list goes on.
It goes on and on and on. And at some point you'll be able to travel again and go and actually, you know, kick the tires of your factories? Have you been able to do that yet, or have you, are you still grounded?
It's very difficult. The team has been able to make a couple of visits. We have one big trip coming up in May for the rest of the team. So I'm excited to really see the factories face to face again.
So 10 years ago, I think that Somersault would have probably been founded in New York City or LA, maybe actually LA more than anywhere else. And what's been amazing, even pre-pandemic, has been the rise of many other cities in America that are appealing to a certain demographic that doesn't want to be in a big mega city anymore. And in fact, now post-pandemic, if we can call it that, we are finding that accelerate even more. How do you find the building of a brand in Missouri is something that is how many brands are from there? I mean, how do you find a community? How have you been? You're probably becoming quite a leader in that community. And I'm sort of fascinated by building businesses in places where historically there haven't actually necessarily been brands or fashion brands or consumer products brands. And maybe I'm ignorant and there are plenty, but I'm really interested to hear how it's been from your perspective.
That's a fascinating question. And early on, we would talk to investors and they had a really hard time understanding how we would attract talent, the top tier talent that we have at Somersault. And I think it's a complicated answer, but the interesting part is that many of the consumer brands, including in, you know, fashion and certainly in active apparel, that have gotten to true scale worldwide, not just in the US over the last 50 years, are not being created on the coast. And I think what it is this idea that to get to scale, you've got to understand the broader audience of consumers. So think Nike, think Lululemon. I guess they're on the coast, but not in New York or LA.
Or Abercrombie and Fitch and Victoria's Secret or and Bath and Body Works and Columbus.
Exactly. Right? The list goes on and on. And from that perspective, there is something to a team being somewhat isolated, unapologetically pursuing their own mission. This is who we are. We're taking a stake in the ground and saying, you know, get on board. This is what we're doing, without the, what I would almost call distractions of the industry. Now, that doesn't say we don't borrow best practices. Absolutely. And we have to have a pulse on what's happening. And certainly, the coastal consumer is taking the lead, and she loves Somersault, and we do index to those population centers, but not just on the coast, across the US. So I think that's absolutely fascinating. But if you look at other kind of brands here based in, you know, our region, we've got Anheuser-Busch and Nestle Purina, you know, Panera. Like, there are some major consumer brands, and again, they're truly at scale, and I think that's part of the brilliance. The pandemic has been a gift to Somersault from a talent perspective. And so we've seen talent from many major direct-to-consumer brands and otherwise just absolutely desperate to move back. And there was a recent article that featured like the top 22 direct-to-consumer brands to bet your career on in 2022. And Somersault was the only brand, essentially from Chicago, you know, down to San Antonio, in the middle of the U.S. And from that perspective, we are a beacon for talent. And so when they come to us, you know, we really get the best of the best. And we also have amazing feeder universities in our region, like Washington University in St. Louis, the University of Missouri. And so that talent, young talent, also is ours for hiring.
It's interesting. It kind of ties a little bit into something that I've heard you say about how to run a business and advice that you give to young entrepreneurs, maybe about, you know, being unapologetically yourself. And it ties into Somersault, obviously, like be yourself and be comfortable. But also maybe if you're in Missouri and building a swimwear company, you're not going to get some, you know, employee who says, oh, well, I used to be at ..brand, and this is how we did it. You're just coming up with the ideas yourself and allowing yourself to be unique. And it's uniqueness that is indeed what will differentiate any brand in the marketplace. And it's sort of interesting maybe that the geography really lends itself to your coaching of maybe your employees and young entrepreneurs about just say no to the things you really don't feel are right for you and just go yes, yes, yes hard at yourself, right? And how does therefore the Somersault mission apply to the way you run the company?
Yeah, we always say it's so important for our external values to match our internal values. And you articulated something that I think we've been doing innately without actually saying it, is that, you know, we are unapologetically ourselves. In some ways, sort of this merry band of misfits just marching to our own beat. But it's very important because that beat is something that's resonating for the consumer. And for the team in general, it truly is a mission. We want Somersault to be the biggest version of what it can be. We know that we've caught lightning in a bottle, and we don't want to let each other down as a team or the consumer down, because what we're doing is so important as it relates to the future of the industry.
So the industry, the industry with a big I or a little I, whichever way we want to talk about it. I think that there's a sort of a changing of the guard happening, and I don't think it's a changing of the brand guard. I think it's a changing of the way brands actually wake up to the fact that the consumer has a different priority set. I think she and he, care, yes, about how they look and how they feel and how people perceive them, but there is a real personal connection to the sort of constellation of brands that people vote with their feet. They vote with their wallet, I guess. That really touches how brands decide to engage with their consumers and how they are transparent or not with them, and whether they're telling them what to wear and what to do versus listening to them and giving them what they want. So it's a very open-ended maybe statement or sort of, which is wrapped in a riddle of a question, which is what, how would you articulate sort of the yesterday's news fashion industry or consumer industry versus where you think the industry will be 10 or 15 years from now? And we're right now at that sort of inflection point. And you may be one of those sort of digital native brands that are, along with quite a few others in different categories, who are maybe leading that transition of a whole industry mindset. So how do you see things going in general?
So first and foremost, I think discovery as it relates to the consumer has changed forever. And really sort of the reality television shows were sort of the first step in that direction. And then Facebook and Instagram influencers. And then now, you know, TikTok has become so important, where in 50 years ago, even 20 years ago, merchants were truly top down dictating the brands that consumers discovered. And that was pretty much without exception. Now the media also influenced those decisions on some level, but to truly get in front of the consumer and get to scale, it had to be a merchant-driven type of environment. Today's discovery is happening everywhere, right? And we live in a truly connected world, and the brands and retailers of the future, like Somersault, will integrate technology and data into that discovery platform across the universe of locations where the consumer lives. So I don't mean just physically, I mean digitally, and, you know, just understanding all the touch points where our community lives, enjoys life, and making sure that we are discoverable at those points is what differentiates the brands of the future. And I think so many kind of what I would say legacy retailers are in a conundrum because, you know, the foot traffic in the mall is down, but that's still their biggest cash generator. We're in the lucky position of being able to say, okay, What is the store of the future? Where should it be? What should that experience be? How does it connect with loyalty and community and content? And then how do we optimize on that from our consumer's perspective? We can focus on the future as opposed to the bleeding, and that's really the difference.
Mm-hmm. Discovery is everywhere, and focus on the future. I think those are words maybe to end on. I think you've done a wonderful, you put a bow on the whole conversation right there. And I think we've reached our time together. And I want to thank you, Laurie Coulter of Somersort, for joining me on the Safari, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much, Marty. It was really fun and I really appreciate it.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.